Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be nations. Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
you like,
nothing
you like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay? Well, then what's the point of...
Scott Russo. What would be the point of that?
What's the point of giving the Rockers theme? I don't know! You know what? I'm from now on just going to read. And if you want to comment, be my guest.
Just read things that are up to date. How about that?
Just shut up. I'm done. I'm not talking about it.
I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and hope you enjoyed your week off. I know I did. I know my PIC did, but we're back at the grind now. Very excited. And of course, my PIC is the one and only Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Welcome back, JR. It's good to talk to you again. Hope you enjoyed life in Sunshine State. PTB Nation, hope you missed us, because we certainly missed you. It's time to get back to the grind, as JR says. We are at episode 195 of the Place to Be podcast. Indeed, we have almost hit the big 200. More on that in the coming weeks. Not too many, but we're working things out.
Yeah, and I do. I put the reminder up on the Facebook pages, but if you haven't yet, I've gotten maybe four or five. Send in your audio clip, and we'll play it on air, kind of like we did for 100, where we had John, but a couple people, you know, sent us a clip in. But this time around, we are going to go straight up with the clips. So, like I said, I've compiled some, but if you want to get those in, please get them to me this week, because I want to get them edited and put into a file and everything in time for 200.
Yes, we got two great episodes tonight, banging them out quick this week. Tonight, of course, we have our usual V Square, and then, of course, a special episode tomorrow night. We'll get to that momentarily. But first, JR. Again, it's good to have you back. How was life in the Sunshine State?
It was good. It was a good trip, and there's always some follies and antagonism along the way.
Well, it was an experimental trip for you. It was the first time you obviously traveled with your beautiful daughter, so I'm sure that had some challenges and excitement along the way.
Yeah, she was great. I mean, going down, we took JetBlue, so we load on the plane. I like JetBlue. And we load in, and we're sitting there, wondering what the hell's going on. In front of the pilot comes on and says that they forgot to upload the blue toilet water when they did the maintenance. So now there's no toilet water. So basically, if we want to go to the bathroom, we can't use it. Or the other option is to stay on the ground until they can get a maintenance cart to come load it up. So we're sitting there waiting, and finally they're able to contact Delta, the only time that fucking stupid airline's ever been, useful for anything. So they send their cart over since they were nearby, and they upload the blue water. So now we're sitting there for a good 40 minutes. So, we're already pushing it as it is with the baby with a three-hour flight. So now we're adding another 40 minutes into the mix. But she's being good. She's, just bouncing around and being antsy. And, she's at the age where she talks a lot. Talks and screeches and gets excited. But nothing super loud or annoying and nothing. She didn't cry at all. But we got these three freaking people in front of us. They're not even together. Three separate people. This one guy's got a $2 Supercuts haircut, fucking Von Erich style. This other bitch with a fucking bird's nest. She must have been like 70-something. And then this other big, fat, sloppy pig in the inside. And, anytime the baby would make a noise or do anything, they'd roll their eyes or make a sigh.
Ugh.
And I was, like, really, really getting angry. I mean, she wasn't kicking a seat. She wasn't doing anything. I mean, she was just talking, just talking away. And that's what she does. What are you going to do? So at one point, maybe it was, like, with 20 minutes left in the flight, she kind of let out, like, a little yell. And the lady goes, "Oh, come on," in front of us. And I almost, Scott, when I tell you I almost lost it, I almost lost it. My wife wouldn't let me say what I wanted to say, but I did just kind of mutter out loud. I don't know if she heard me or not, but I said, "You know, this is public transportation. Why don't you get a private jet if you don't want to hear any other talking or anything?" But I don't know. I wanted to. It was at that point. I wish the baby was loud and crying and kicking her seat. I really wish that it was worse if they were going to be that fucking rude about it.
Right.
Fucking ratty ass bitch.
I hate people like that. I hate people like that.
This guy had the worst haircut this side of fucking Matt Rotella, this clown in front of me.
Oh God! Wow.
He looked like a Von Erich brother. That's what he looked like.
Oh Jesus!
Fucking jackass.
Good God. Ugh. Yeah, I can't stand that. You know, it's like, what do you expect? All right, you know, you're not in your car, so you know, get over it.
Yeah, no, it's annoying.
It's a baby. You know, it's not like a 3-year-old who. I mean, let me tell you something. Some people, and I've seen it at wrestling shows and everything, kids that just run around with no fucking shoes on and, you know, causing a ruckus and everything. Right. I mean.
Oh yeah, I mean, I get it. You know, if she was screaming, I would have. You know, I would have been more apologetic. You know, if she was like screaming or kicking the seat and throwing it, but she wasn't even doing it. I mean, she really was for an 11-month-old. She was damn good, and you know, we get compliments left and right, and the whole week, everywhere we went, restaurants and on the plane home. You know, we're getting complimented on how well behaved she is and how happy she is, and that's what made me even angrier. And like I said, I wanted to say a lot worse than I did, but I held back. So then I'm at the pool. I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. And it was really funny. I'm sitting there laughing. It's a condo unit that we're at, my parents have, and a lot of course, you know, snowbirds are down there, so a lot of older people. And this one old lady showing another group of women these pictures, and she's like, "Oh, these are my son-in-laws or whatever." And the other one goes, "Oh, what is this, a beard contest? Who can grow more hair on their face? Tell them your friend said that." So the lady goes, "Oh, well, they do live in New York City, so..." And she goes, "Oh, well, that explains it, the New York influence." I was like, what the fuck? I was like, where the hell am I, the New York influence? I mean, you travel back to the 1930s? I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Oh, God, here comes the Gold Dust Trio.
I know. Oh, my Lord, these people from New York City and their crazy beards. The fuck?
Oh, my God.
I was like, you know, if they were, like, snorting coke in the picture or something, I'd get it. I'd say, oh, New York, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Fucking ridiculous. I don't even talk about the security lines. It's another freaking disaster.
Oh, my God. It's not like you're showing pictures of D'Amato or something, you know? It's like, oh, my God, those New Yorkers.
Look at them with their crazy facial hair. They're so wild and out of control.
God, I hate old people. Anyway, well, I'm glad you had some experience. What would a JR PIC trip be without you getting annoyed at somebody? So
you don't even know how close I was to tearing that nasty bird's nest off that old bag's hair.
Oh my God, what is that? What were you, a fucking Travel Honey Boo Boo's family?
Oh,
you need some fat slop.
She was like watching like CSI or some shit. I'm like, shut the fuck up. You're watching CSI. Sorry.
All you needed some like fat slob with a tank top and fucking tattoos and shit. Oh my God.
The right, like, of course, 20 minutes left. You know, Juliana shits her fucking diaper. So I wanted to just take it off and throw it at her. Fucking.
You should have pulled a Vince and fucking. Yeah, exactly. Should have pulled a Vince and fucking thrown it at her.
I did. On the way home, I did change my first diaper at 35,000 feet in the air. That was interesting.
There you go. The parental version of the Mile High Club.
Yes. Yes.
Exciting. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. It's good to have you back. I will have my own week's experiences coming up in a few months. But it's good to have you back, mm-hmm. And it's good to be back on.
Yeah, and I've been jonesing. Jonesing some podcast action.
Yeah, no, it was a good, you know, I had a lot of stuff going on last week. It was actually, believe it or not, only for convenience sake, it was good. I mean, last week was, of course, Super Bowl week, and mm-hmm. working with CBS last week was sheer hell. So it was actually good that you and I didn't record last week, because I was home quite late some nights, and it wouldn't have been very fun. So it actually worked out. But I'm actually jacked and ready to go. I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that once every 3 years. Good luck, Fox, next year. Quick side, and we'll talk more about it with Mr. Forchetti next Wednesday on mm-hmm. our headline show, but just overall impressions of the game.
It was one of those games where I wouldn't say it's good. It wasn't a good game, but it was very entertaining and exciting to watch. But it was not good. I wouldn't say it was like a, you know, well-played game.
Yeah.
Like, when I think of good, well-played Super Bowls, I think of the Arizona-Pittsburgh game. To me, that was like a great game. It was well played and exciting. To me, this was along the lines more like the Patriot Giants ones, where maybe not really fundamentally well played, but you know, exciting to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, a couple points for me. Number one, I concur with you. I mean, I thought Joe Flacco played a fantastic game, but one game does not one guy make. I mean, for God's sakes. You know,
well, it's even more than that. We'll get into that more Wednesday with Kyle. I'm curious his take on it, but you know, Flacco, to me, he made some good throws. He played very well. But, you know, all his big plays, he just chucks it up 50 yards in the air, and the guy, I mean, the touchdown to Jones was terrible pass. He had to come back four steps and fell down. I mean,
no, you know, the worst part there was, what's his name, Tolliver?
Oh, yeah, well, he deserved to get burnt as bad as, I'm glad he got the shit kicked
out. But, I mean, how do you, the whole point of a guy falling, you're supposed to tackle him, not jump over him so he doesn't touch you.
He could have easily swatted the ball, too, just ran by. I don't know, he got clowned big time in that game, and it was great to see. Yeah. But I do think I'm the first person ever to predict the Super Bowl champion before the playoffs, but not pick them in any game throughout the rounds. That's exactly what happened with Baltimore.
Yeah. But I thought your boy Kaepernick played well. Unfortunately, that offense is kind of tough when you're trailing. So I think that's why he struggled a little bit in the first half. But he picked it up.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, they've come back from big deficits quite a bit with him at the helm. I just think it was poor clock management really did them in, having to take those couple timeouts. That really bad challenge. Where he, you know, what was it, second in, and they gave the Ravens the first down. He challenged a spot. It was like half a foot they gained. I don't know, that was kind of stupid. Then, you know, he needed that timeout later. And then the other one, he had a burn when Kaepernick couldn't get the snap off in time within the 10 there. So to me, there was a couple spots with that. And just poor play calling. That last drive was brutal. So for one of the guys who's been, you know, the best, probably arguably the top two coach of the year the last two seasons, to see him kind of shit the bed like that on, you know, the biggest game of his career was kind of surprising. But
I think they'll be back, though. I don't know if the Ravens will be back.
No, they're going to have a lot of changes, so they probably won't be.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of changes. But I think the Niners, we'll talk more about that in the spring. But it was a perfect year. It was a perfect game to end what was a horrendous season for NFL officiating.
Oh, yeah.
Except the last play. I don't have a problem with the last play. And we can talk more about that with Kyle, because that was a no-ball.
Okay.
But we'll do that next week. But anyway, I just want to get your thoughts on the game.
Yep.
But anyway, my point is, I'm glad that was the only good thing about us not recording last week was the fact that CBS hosted the game and I was ready to put you with the mullet crew there, about the same. So, but it's good to be back on with you, JR, of course, and PTB Nation. Good to be with you as well. Got a lot to talk about over the next couple weeks. But tonight, it is Monday, which means let's open the door.
Hey! What is going on here?
It was only a week off, dumbass. You knew we were coming in.
You couldn't stand tonight. Couldn't stand the wait.
No, couldn't stand to wait. Tonight, JR, it is, of course, Vintage Vault Night. And inside V-Squared, we unleash the master plan.
A marked champion.
I'm going to buck your ass.
A master plan. I'm damn sick and tired of watching you walk around with a WWF championship belt. A triple threat match with unholy alliances. Steve Austin, Kane, WWF Breakdown, presented live by Stridex, tonight on pay-per-view.
Oof. I love that. That stretch, this stretch coming up between now and March, has the best promo. This is where I think they really, really hit their stride in terms of like creative and graphics and promo creating. Right from this point, all the way probably on, but really particularly this next 7 months is downright perfect in terms of cutting promos and you know, packages and building stuff. Just incredible. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, in your house, Breakdown 1998.
Breakdown.
No, there was no music.
This is the first show in quite a while, Scott. I want to say since Cold Day in Hell that I didn't see live.
Really?
Yeah. It actually was a while before I saw this one because I had started school freshman year of college that month. So obviously didn't have pay-per-view capability at the time.
Yep.
So these next few shows were up and down for me a lot of times watching. And I mean, I was still watching Raw. I want to say by November, I definitely was watching Raw religiously every week again. But there was definitely that first stretch where you're kind of settling in and, you know, you don't know who, you know. I mean, wrestling, luckily for me, when I was in college, wrestling was really hot. So it was kind of acceptable to watch at the time. But it did take me, a few weeks to really settle in. And I think there are some of these Raws where I was in and out of and wasn't fully paying attention.
And that's unfortunate because these next, like, six, 7 weeks are probably some of the best Raws
in
history. So
I suffered through all those, stupid 94 and 95 Raws. And then I get to the best time period of Raw history. And, of course, I didn't get to see them. But we were, you know, I'm reliving them now through 24/7 and whatnot. But I mean, I can't say I missed many. I just don't have that firm recollection because obviously I wasn't taping them anymore, rewatching them, and I wasn't, you know, really studying them because we were, you know, farting around the room and everything while we had it on.
But I do remember seeing this live. I missed next month, but then starting in November, I would go through a Vince pay-per-view stretch of consecutive months that I watched it live. I went through a good run. But I did remember seeing – I remember watching this one live. Mm-hmm. The date, September 27th, 1998, live from the Cops Coliseum in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Our first visit back, JR, to this building since
– The 88 Royal Rumble.
That is correct. So we did not have our usual format that we do now. So a brief history, JR.
Broke ground on July 8th, 83. Opened November 30th, 85. Owned by the city of Hamilton. Let's see.
So fairly new building for the 88 Rumble.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, just opened. Yeah. Holds about 19,000 for concerts, 17,383 for hockey. Here are the tenants. The Hamilton Steelhawks of the OHL and the Dukes of Hamilton of the OHL.
Oh, owned by the Duke of Dorchester?
Possibly. Hamilton Skyhawks of the NBL, Hamilton Canucks of the AHL, Hamilton Bulldogs of the AHL, still playing there, started in 96.
Yep.
Ontario Raiders of the NLL, and occasionally the home of the Toronto Raptors for a couple of years in the late 90s.
Really?
Also,
must have been in between before the Air Canada Center was built, most likely.
Probably, yeah, when they had first started. Because they started, like, in, what, 95 or 96, the Raptors?
96, because I think it was the same year the Grizzlies started, so...
Yes, they started together. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
95, okay. They were founded.
Okay.
Also, this arena is also used quite a bit by Saturday Night Live as the exterior of an arena for many of their sketches.
Oh,
random.
Wow.
Very random.
That's very random, yes. So there we go. There is the Cops Coliseum. So for those that thought that it was one of these old dumps in the late 80s, mind you, with the when the 88 Rumble went down, was only barely, what, 3.5 years old, 3 years old. So
yeah, now they wanted to move a hockey team here, correct?
Yes, they did.
They wanted to move the Coyotes.
They wanted to move the Coyotes here, but the building, I don't think, had, you know, the usual Gary Bettman, you know, blowjob things, suites and all that crap. So Phoenix State.
Well, then they were interested in Atlanta, and they went to Winnipeg instead.
Right, and the Jets, obviously, yes, they moved. So, but the Hamilton Bulldogs actually are in the AHL now. They play... they play in the AHL with the, you know, the Bridgeport Sound Tigers and those teams because the AHL merged with the IHL, mm-hmm. which is the Chicago Wolves and all those teams. So Hamilton comes to Bridgeport, I think, like 2 or 3 times a year. Your attendance, you mentioned, JR, pretty good crowd, 17,405. Good crowd, Canadian crowd, of course, so they'll be hot as hell.
Sponsored by Stridex.
Stridex. That's one you'll see a lot of over the next, like, 3 years. Stridex goes along with M&Ms and... what else? Karate Fighters has graduated now. It's like it's like Stridex, M&M's.
Super Soaker, are they done? They're done.
Super Soaker's done. We don't get to WWE.com for like 5 years when they realize they have no more they have no more sponsors. But yeah, so Stridex sponsoring In Your House Breakdown. And your announcer, oh, by the way, buy rate 0.86, and your usual announcers, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler.
Now, of course, this show was coming off that usual weird September where, thanks to the U.S. Open, was still bumping Raw, so we had the Saturday Night Raw episodes a couple times during the Tennis Open, and then Heat going on, and you know, a lot of different stuff coming off of SummerSlam, which I believe this was the final year that happened. I think by 99, they started, thanks to the humongous ratings they were getting, USA started realizing, shit, we can't keep bumping these guys, and I think that's when they started pushing them either Tennis off to another channel, or they'd air Raw. When, remember they aired it like later that night? Was that 99 and 2000 or something?
Yeah, Raw would Vince would schedule it so Raw that night would be like in Los Angeles or San Diego.
Yeah, and it would air live at like 11 o'clock. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think that went on for a couple of years, and then I think it wasn't until they came back to USA where they finally had full command over those shows. They weren't bumped at all, but I think it was that was part of the reason they left for TNN.
Yeah, and NBC by then, or Universal, got more branches, so the dog show went to Bravo, and you know, the Open would go to like CNBC,
Bravo.
Dino Bravo, the Dino Bravo channel.
So now, I did attend a Raw during this stretch here, Scott. It was in Lowell, Mass.
Now.
Yes, I did.
It
was quite the memorable occasion. I want to get the exact date for you here. It was recorded September 1st, 98, a 10,000 seat sellout. Mm-hmm. It aired the following, actually 2 weeks later, on September 12th it aired. on Raw. So it was in the can for a couple weeks before it finally aired. So obviously, tickets would go on sale in the summer. And a mutual friend of both mine and Mr. Flanagan, Mr. Adam Murray, was introduced to me over the summer. Actually, first, I started talking to him a little bit rudimentarily on AOL. And he said, oh, I got a friend that's also going to Assumption. I think we met at orientation, actually, in like June or whatever. And so then we ran into each other again. We were buying tickets for a WCW house show that was going down. And we actually ran into each other at like JCPenney or whatever. That was where the Ticketmaster office was. So we kind of knew each other.
No, I was going to say, back in those days, Filene's or any of those stores. Yeah, that's where I always bought my wrestling tickets.
Yeah, we had to go there to get them. So anyway, I digress. So we met there, and I didn't really know him that well at all. And he emails me randomly out of the blue in like July. And he's like, oh, Raw's going to be in Lowell in September. He's like, should I get us tickets? We'll go. And I really didn't know the kid, but I'm like, yeah, what the hell? I'm like, I'm not going to have a car, do you? He's like, no. He's like, but my roommate's going to have one. He said we could borrow it. So I'm like, all right.
Oh, Jesus.
So no, I didn't tell my parents because I already know, you know, on literally the next day was the first day of classes. Because this was over Labor Day weekend. So I knew already that there was no chance in hell, you know, they'd be cool with me going up to Lowell Monday night for Raw and then starting class the next day. So I didn't tell them at all. So Adam buys the tickets. We get to school, of course. We're there over the Labor Day weekend. And it turns out that his roommate didn't bring the car or some bullshit. We couldn't use the car. Right. So now we got these two tickets and we have no way to get to Lowell from Worcester. So we're like, fuck, what are we going to do? So Mr. Flanagan has a car, and he's going. He's going to the University of Chicago, and they have trimesters, so they didn't start till the end of September. So I call Andy, and we say, "Hey, if we buy, or if Adam volunteered, he said, if I pay for your ticket, will you come up and drive us up?" And Andy's like, "Yeah, sure." So we actually got floor seats. We were like four rows back, I think, from the ring, four or five rows back.
Nice.
But Adam could only get Andy a single seat, like eight rows behind us. So you would have had to sit alone. But, like, whatever. We'll figure it out when we get there. So Andy comes up the Monday. We drive up to Lowell. Everything's going fine. We find that shithole of an arena. We park. We go sit down. And we get there a little bit late, of course. And so the show's starting. There's a dark match in the ring, and the lights are kind of dim. So we go sit down. And to our surprise, on the floor, there's three seats available where ours were. So there's one adjacent to our two seats open still. So, like, shit, maybe we're going to get lucky, and Andy can sit with us. So he sits down with us. So then, of course, maybe like 5 or 6 minutes later, this family comes in, and they have Andy's seat. And so, you know, being the brash young 17-year-olds that we are, I start kind of arguing with a guy. So an usher comes over, and he's kind of at the end of the aisle, and it's kind of chaotic. Music's playing. There's a match going on in the ring. It's dark in the arena. And so the usher is on the left side of the aisle, and then, you know, it's me, or it's Adam, me, Andy, and then this other family on the other side. So the usher's like, well, let me see your ticket. So I give him the ticket for the seat. He goes, okay, let me see their ticket. And when the guy gives me his, instead of passing his to the usher, I gave him mine again. So it looked like there were two of the same ticket. He was looking at the same fucking ticket. So he's like, oh, man, they must have really screwed this up. Hang on, let me go talk to someone. So he leaves, and now we can't believe that this is actually working. So he goes to the back, comes back, and he's like, all right. He's like, how about this? Will you three come sit over here in the penalty box? So we're like, yeah, fuck yeah, that'll be awesome. So we leave. We let the family have the seats. We go sit in this penalty box that's right across the ring, across the hard camera. So we load into the penalty box. Of course, Adam, when he climbs over, his fucking ass hangs out of his jeans, and he moons the whole friggin' Saugus Arena. God. So we go sit in this penalty box, and we're just like shitting and grinning on our face. We cannot believe the luck that we've had now. And we are literally, if you watch that Raw, it actually aired on 24/7 a couple months ago. We are on camera pretty much the whole time in the penalty box.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so, you know, 1.2, they throw out the foam heads for Al Snow, and Adam actually stole it from this little kid, and we felt bad, so I gave him mine. He like just took it out of his hands.
What an asshole.
So then halfway through the show, you know, we're freaking out. We're in this penalty box. It's like an amazing live experience. And we go, Jim Dotson comes over, security guard. And he's like, hey, we need you guys to fill some seats, and if you do, we'll have you come backstage after. So like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. So
he
takes us about halfway up the seats, up halfway up the ramp there, and you know the seats aren't as good. We're off camera now, but we're like, fuck that, who cares? It's just the end of the show, we're gonna go backstage. So the show ends, and we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're waiting. No Jim Dotson. We go down and ask security. They play dumb, so we're like, fuck, the asshole fucking screwed us. So we didn't get to go backstage, and we have given up our awesome penalty box. I think part of them wanted to fill seats, but I think they also wanted us out of the penalty box behind the fucking ring with our stupid signs sitting there bunking for the camera the whole show. So we end up, we pile back in the car. Now we're starving, of course, because we're there later than we would have wanted to because we hung around. We stop and we figure there's a Wendy's off the highway. We stop there. They're closed. We got out of the drive-thru. We're banging on the window. They refused to serve us. I wanted to go Kepatera on the place, throw the fucking rock in the window. So we go home. I'm fucking starving. My roommate had wanted the DX Troop 69 shirt. I didn't get that for him. I felt bad. So we stumble into the room. We pass out, and then, of course, I had class the next day. I did buy my first DX Suck It shirt that night, though.
Ah, okay.
So anyway, there's my story.
There you go. There's there was a moral to the story and a happy ending. You did get a new shirt. However, little did you realize, only knowing him for a few months, what kind of human being Adam Murray would be.
Stanky one.
A stanky, evil child gift stealer. Adam's a good guy. He's a little creepy, but good guy. The plan of man came through.
So. Yeah, he did. That was real awesome. We had a good time, good memory, and that will not be the last live event Raw of a year for us, and we'll get to that, of course, in a few weeks.
Exactly.
So, and that house show will come into play there as well. The WCW house show.
That is correct, actually. Yes, you are quite right. So, there were a lot of Raws and that were just red hot in this stretch. I mean, this is probably the best. I would say it's probably the best Raw stretch. You were not in a very happy mood during this stretch, but probably not till, you should have been in a happy mood at the end of the night, but we'll get to that in a minute. All right, let's dive in. JR, we have three matches that emanated from Sunday Night Heat. What were they?
Your boy Golga of the Oddities defeated Mosh of the Headbangers. That feud's still edging along. The Hardy Boys defeated Kai and Tai, Teo and Funaki in a tag team match. Of course, the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff, longtime jobbers. We'll get to them shortly here.
Yep.
An 8-Ball defeated Billy Gunn and Skull in a triple threat match. It's an odd match.
What? What?
I think Road Dogg, I read something about that. I think Road Dogg was beaten up during Heat or something, so maybe it was supposed to be a tag match or something.
Mm, interesting. Golga, what do you think? Do you think they were, we were talking on the last show, you know, maybe they were giving Tenta a singles push, you know, putting him in a singles match here on Heat. You think maybe they were thinking about it?
I think they should have. He was in great shape. And I really think, it was fine for them to ride out the Oddities thing. But once it was over, I think it would have been good to unmask him and get him back to being either Quake or just being John Tenta. Not a fish, a man.
Yes. There you go. There's your Sunday Night Heat matches. All right. I think we have, 8 matches total. Pretty loaded show in terms of matches. Man. Storyline stuff, pretty moderate. Not like we have.
Cocksucker, motherfucker!
I don't know if Golga was saying that. It's Golga was like a happy guy.
This to me is one of the weirdest pay per view cards in WWF history, and I don't think I'm going too over the top saying that. A lot of unique characters, but the matches and pairings are very weird, and they all kind of had feuds going on, but I think they just chalked this up to being such a weird month coming off SummerSlam and that crazy build. And the fact that they really, had the 2 weeks layoff with the U.S. Open and they were airing on the Saturdays and they only had a couple weeks to build to the show. And, they really focused on the main event here. I think the rest of the card just kind of fell into place. And I think the low undercard that we'll start with, I think that it's grabbed a bunch of these guys and mixed them into weird matches because, the first 4 or 5 matches are all very random.
They are very random. But a couple of them actually really help guys for the future.
It's a good character showcase, but for a pay-per-view, this is odd. There doesn't seem to be a lot of, heated issues behind these matches, but, it's a good showcase for a lot of guys.
Yeah, it was. And this opener, I think, is a main proponent of it. Our opener pits the singles debut of a guy who made his debut last month at SummerSlam in a mixed tag, and that is, of course, Mr. You think you know me, and that is, of course, Edge. Edge makes a singles debut here against a guy whose identity is he's kind of in flux a little bit. And that is, of course, the King of Hearts, the Nugget, etc., Owen Hart.
Now, the Nation was kind of breaking apart at this point.
Yeah.
Still kind of hanging on a little bit in name, but not really. So Owen's kind of more on his own again. And he'll get into a really weird angle and feud. We'll cover that. I think not for another few shows we get into that, really. The meat and potatoes would kick off the night after the show. A lot of very weird angle, but interesting.
Yes.
So, but here he's still kind of the Nation Owen, still kind of just farting around, and he gives Edge his first singles pay-per-view match.
Yes, and I like this match a lot, actually, for a couple reasons. Number one, I mean, obviously Owen, tremendous worker. But this was a good match for Edge because, obviously, in his first singles match in Canada, so we got a nice hometown pop, even though he's, I guess, a little west of where he's actually from, but the Canadians all bond together. So got a good pop, and even Owen got a little bit of a pop, although he was wearing, I think he was getting heel heat. Was he wearing an Argos jersey? Is that what it was? Toronto Argonauts.
Is that here? I think that's later in the year.
Was that later in the year? I thought it was this match.
I think it's a Rock Bottom. He's got it on.
Okay, you might be right. Okay.
Maybe it's both. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember which one it was. But anyway, he he's of course evil, angry Owen. But these two really put on a good match. Mm. I think Owen really gives Edge a nice. It's almost
not a surprise.
Like, yeah, and I mean it's almost like a midterm exam of sorts for Edge in the in-ring department. I mean, here's a guy, he's already got the pop from the fans. He's mysterious, young, blonde guy, long blonde hair, good, good shape. Girls are digging him. But now it was time to give him a good in-ring test. And what better guy to give an in-ring test to than the King of Hearts himself. So, really good match. The big thing in this match, of course, a debut that causes Edge to lose this match.
Yes, this mysterious man just shows up at ringside.
Yes.
Edge had escaped the sharpshooter, hit a leg lariat. It looked like maybe he was going to pick up the win. This guy that kind of looked like Edge comes out, long blonde hair, white puffy shirt, one of Jerry Seinfeld's pirate shirts comes out, and he distracts Edge. Edge gets rolled up by Owen Hart, and Owen wins. So we'll find out over the coming weeks who this guy is.
Yes, and we do actually mention who he is on our review, but we will not say who it is tonight. But follow along with us, Bigelow34.proboards.com, our unbelievably awesome message board, and we'll, of course, pimp it even more later on because it's red hot right now. So Owen Hart gets the win. Edge is distracted by this mysterious other blonde, long blonde guy, and gets the victory. Match is just under 10 minutes, about 9.5, a little under 9.5. But really, really good for, Owen, matches speak for themselves. But for Edge in particular, really needed a good guy to work with in the ring to kind of get himself over and get a good pay-per-view workout.
Pirate! Well, I don't want to be a pirate!
Well, you can't now because your shirt's gone. So this guy looked better with it on anyway. So there you go. Owen Hart gets the win after a roll-up.
He's a low-talker. Can't hear anything she's saying.
just over 9 minutes.
We need to do a Seinfeld roundtable. That's what we need to do.
Oh, God.
Maybe we'll do that the week you're away.
Okay, because that's the one I host. I'd have to host that one because I just have to throw questions at you guys because I don't.
There you go. It'll be me, Greenhouse, and D'Amato the week you're away. We're just gonna do a Seinfeld show, and Andy, and Josh,
and someone else.
Everyone right. But you.
Hey, fine. Not a show I was. I said I didn't enjoy it. Just not a show I watched. All right. Next up.
What a jerk.
Kind of an unusual. Why do you gotta take so personally? I didn't hate it. It's one of those shows that if you don't get into it from the beginning. See, Art didn't watch it either, so what do you want from me? Our next match, Tag Team Affair. Again, kind of the.
I don't do any tricks.
I'm surprised he wasn't in a Seinfeld episode. I think it'd be very, very fascinating. I don't know. They would have spent a half hour talking about the cockroach on the pants and the pink shirt. George probably would have said, I want one of those pink shirts. And then, Steinbrenner would have wanted the eggplant calzone and the pink t-shirt. Anyway, all right, here's the tag match. We have a couple of members of this unusual faction that is starting to form. And that is Al Snow, guy you just mentioned with his foam heads, and Scorpio, the former Flash Funk, taking on a team that we've seen intermittently over the year. That is, of course, Too Much, the team of Scott Taylor and Mr. Brian Christopher. We've got a little backstory on this match, JR. Why don't you give us the lowdown?
Well, Mr. Snow, of course, lost at King of the Ring to Too Much in that travesty with him and Head, and was banished and didn't get his contract, and he actually left. He went back to ECW for a little bit, finished up there. But came time in the fall for some mid-card fancy to come back up, and there he was. So on the 8/17 Raw, a promo aired previewing Snow's return, but it was not mentioned again for the next 2 weeks. Finally, on the 9/7 show, Snow popped out, showed up out of nowhere, and of course, actually, we have it as 9/7, but 9/12, according to Graham, is the one I was at. So did he appear twice? I don't know.
I don't know.
So anyway, So Snow came by. I knew he was coming because they passed out the foam heads ahead of time so we could wave them as he came through the crowd. And he got into this kind of weird little feud with Commissioner Slaughter, still hanging around as one of Vince McMahon's lackeys. So Slaughter was attacked by Snow, and the next week on Heat, Slaughter challenged Snow to a boot camp match. If Snow won, he'd be reinstated. If he lost, he'd be done for good. And Snow pinned the Sarge in the 921 Raw, was promptly attacked by the Stooges after the match. And then Snow's fellow ex-ECW alum Scorpio made the save, and a new team was formed, and they decided they'd game some revenge on Too Much. So a new little unit here. Scorpio, of course, had originally turned back from being Flash Funk at the urging of Terry Funk, and that team dissolved. Then he teamed with Farouk, and it looks like that team's now done, and now he's with Al Snow.
Yep. Of course, this is one of those, I don't say nondescript tag matches, but obviously you're bringing a feud back from, you know, 3 months ago. This is where you really get into the true Vince Russo era, though, you know, the pay-per-view express line. You know, a lot of matches, but really not much meat in them. Right. I mean, this one wasn't bad, a little over 8 minutes. I mean, not horrible. Yeah, not a terrible match. I mean, you got good workers, at least. I mean, the one thing you could say, at least these mid-card guys, even if the matchups were a little unusual, at least they all brought the goods.
Yeah.
And you had, you know, you had decent matches. I mean, sometimes some of the matchups when we get into 1999 get a little shaky.
No, and but I will say this, too. I mean, Snow was really over at this point.
Yeah,
I mean, he had the ECW buzz behind him. And, you know, a lot of excitement in the air there. And he, I mean, the fans were really into him. I remember at the show I was at, they were going crazy for him. And, the head stuff was over. And I thought he brought a lot of energy to the mid-card. And I liked the idea of putting Scorpio with him to kind of reboot him a little bit, too, and maybe hook in some of those ECW fans.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously Scorpio, legendary worker in ECW. And when you just make him who he is instead of, you know, the high boots and the funkettes and all that jazz and the fuzzy hat and everything, you have a good wrestler. So really good match. And
funny to think he's been around 2 years now already.
Yeah. And how many pay-per-view matches? Really not as many as you would think. I'll have to look back. What, maybe seven?
Oh, God. Has he even been that many?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, I'll have to look back because he doesn't stick around too much longer. But again, good match, and Al Snow does indeed get his revenge. Al hits his snowplow finisher on Scott Taylor to get the victory. So overall, good match. I mean, again, no real logic behind it, but it was entertaining. I mean, nothing, you know, nothing to write home about, but, you know, nothing terrible. You know, it wasn't a time waster in the sense that
it was good to see Snow down, get the clean win as well.
Yeah, exactly. All right, next up. Looks like a vote for my PICJR's heel of the year.
Yes.
The great, marvelous Mark Morrow taking on, I guess you could call him the newest member of.
Should we play the song? Does it count? Nah, it's going to be one of the originals involved, right?
Yeah, it's not. No, it's not. No, not at all. And that is, of course, Draws.
You'd rather play Hit 'Em Up by Tupac here instead.
Yes. And that is, of course, Draws, the newest member of the Legion of Doom. Really?
Huh? Oh my God! He's gonna puke!
Oh man! The best part about that whole little clip is Vince kind of sings it. It's like he's gonna puke. <It's> like, I thought you'd find that funny. It's like he's doing the scales. So, the match, I mean, this is really a Vince Russo match here. I mean, there's nothing behind this match whatsoever.
Yeah, it was a very random match. I mean, I guess they just wanted to get Draws a solo shot. I mean, he's still the LOD stuff going on, though. So it was just very, very random. And two heels. Well, I guess Draws wasn't really a heel. He was still kind of a face here. But yeah, just odd stuff. Very odd stuff. And Mero, of course. You know, with the SummerSlam match behind him, the Sable feud's pretty much done. So he doesn't really seem to have much of a direction here either at this point. It was good, though, to see him still get a solo match on pay-per-view. I was excited for that.
Yes.
Again, one of my favorites of the year. And a good worker still. I thought he was really had honed his heel style now as this year has gone on. And he gets a pretty good match out of Draws. And so far, this card is weird. You know, it's very nothing great, nothing bad, no, not much heat. The fans are kind of into it because of the personalities involved, and it's just an odd show so far.
It is, and
it's almost like they really didn't want to have this show, so like they just decided to like showcase a bunch of guys instead of actually building up to it. I really think it had to do with that, and we'll have to ask Kevin this when we do the end of '98. But I really wonder how much of it had to do with the fact that They didn't have the full build with those weird Raws.
Well, that plus, obviously, well, they had one thing in mind, and we'll get to that when we get to the main event. There was one storyline that was already etched and ready to rock and roll. I thought this a lot during this year stretch, and we'll talk about it more as we move forward. I always seem to feel that, like, the mid-card almost got forgotten. Like, Vince Russo was just creating funny bits for the guys while the serious writers were dealing with the serious storyline. We'll get to that one, of course, at the end. And they kind of, like, were kind of meandering their way through. I wonder if this also has a lot to do with they weren't sure about Sean yet. So I wonder if that was kind of leaving a hole in the roster, and they were kind of like, they didn't know what the hell to do. Well, we got the main event. What the hell are we going to do now? I don't know. Throw a bunch of guys in and let them wrestle. Almost like a paid Raw in a roundabout way. The next match... Oh, by the way, this match is really nothing to write home about. A little over 5 minutes, and Mauro gets the win. Were you surprised at that, JR, that Mauro actually won the match?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was surprised. I mean, I was glad, but I would have thought Draws would get the win here since he seemed to be the one in line for the push, you know, even if he wanted the pizza phone card and the case of beer, whatever the hell it was. But he, you know, he definitely wanted his push, so I was surprised. I really thought Mauro would win, and he wins pretty clean here. I mean, Jackie gets a little involved distracting the ref, but nothing crazy goes on. So good win for Mauro. Does the Marvelosity, hikes up the pants over his tits, and hits it for the win, and that's it.
Yes. But the big question is soon, JR, when will the pay-per-view be sponsored by Wishberries? I'll see.
That's the question.
Next. Yes, it is. Next up, a very sad moment in time, because we say farewell to one of my favorite, and I know deep down one of your favorites too, superstars in the history of the business. And he says goodbye here.
I don't know, man. I don't know. She's just acting real funky.
No, it's not him. We said goodbye to him a long time ago. But on a side note, JR, you see what your boy DDP's doing to him? Looks like a completely new man.
Shit. What, chocolate or something?
Yeah, no, he's doing
that now.
He's doing a great job. Jake's in phenomenal shape. Got his life together. And, yeah, you can thank DDP. Moved in with him. And, you know, Paige tells a story about how he, you know, Jake kind of guided him early on and helped him out. And he felt like he owed him from those days in WCW. And he wanted to repay him by saving his life, basically. So they're living in this house together, doing yoga all day long, and look at the benefits. So, hey, I was on the DDP yoga bandwagon before it blew up with all this other stuff. And,
yes.
I do still do it. It's not my full-time workout, but I do still do it. I still enjoy it. And, yeah, it's cool to see. So, I'm glad he's got to turn around. Maybe he'll make it to the Hall of Fame someday.
Yep. Well, obviously we have a class of 2014 coming up. So, all right. But that's not who we're talking about tonight. We're talking about another guy who I don't know if he'll ever go into the Hall of Fame if he doesn't stop being such a dick. we've documented it recently when we've seen him. But at the time, though, still a guy that needed to be reckoned with. But as we know, the last, say, what, year or so was not exactly the best for him. And that is, of course, the Mastodon, the man they call Vader.
Vader.
This is the end of the line. Takes on another guy who kind of needs some sort of direction. He's been in a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and that is indeed Bradshaw.
You're breaking Bradshaw. A little black sheep on me.
So, interesting match here. Before we talk about the match, why don't we get into the end of the line. This is pretty much the end of the World Wrestling Federation pay-per-view career of the man they call Vader. At his debut in the 96 Rumble, I mean, when he debuted, JR, we thought, this is it. You know that song goes exactly with Antonio Cesaro's little victory dance?
I guess that's where he got it from.
Fits perfectly. Yes. Love that song. Love that song.
Yeah.
By
the way, Scott, did you know that earlier in that month, September 98, they went back to the Warwick Musical Theater? I didn't realize they were still there that late.
Wow, really? Do you have the card in front
of
you?
Yeah. Well, first they hit the Cape Cod Melody Tent and the South Shore Music Circus the two nights before. And then they hit
Wait a minute. The Cape Cod Melody Tent was still open, too?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that thing closed like in 94. Wow. All
right. So here's a musical theater. I want to ask Kevin about this, too, if he ever went to any of these shows. So a sellout, 2009-94, under the tent. Headbangers defeated Too Much. The Giant Silva. I don't know how Giant Silva even fit in that fucking place.
Jesus.
Defeated Sean Stasiak. Bradshaw defeated Draws. Val beat Mark Mero. Luna defeated Jackie. Shamrock defeated Mark Henry. Southern Justice beat Farouk and Scorpio. Vader beat Kane after by DQ. And the main event was the Outlaws defeating The Rock and D'Lo Brown.
Wow.
Interesting card.
Maybe not.
That's a lot of matches for the 10. Usually it was only like 6 matches. So.
Yeah.
Kind of sad it didn't go.
Let's hope Giant Silver didn't knock over the Dells part.
That was just a couple days after I was in Lowell. Funny.
Oh. Very sad that you didn't make it to the... Was that probably... You think that was the last... Last show at the tent?
I'll check 99 if they went. Because I went to go see... In 99, I saw Kenny Rogers there. And then it closed like shortly after that.
You saw The Gambler?
Oh, yeah. He was good in concert.
That's pretty awesome. That's they were there. I'll be honest with you, that's a guy that I've always wanted to see, believe it or not.
They were there in 99 as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not the other place. Oh, yeah, wait. Yep, they were at the Melody Tent. K-Cod Melody Tent as well.
Hmm. Interesting.
See, they moved it, though, because I remember when I used to go, I think it was more towards late August, and they went over Labor Day weekend. They kind of moved it around.
I'm curious how the weather was that day. Early September can't be that bad. Probably.
All right, well, there was definitely none in 2000, so 99 was the last one.
Okay. Bummer, huh?
I went to those few, was it 92, 93, and 94? Those were the only three I went to.
How much were those tickets? You probably didn't know.
Yeah, usually my uncle bought them for me and my cousin, but I don't think they were bad.
It couldn't have been that bad. What, $15 maybe? Yeah. 20 tops, probably, and that might be ringside. But anyway, 1996, when Vader debuted at the Rumble, JR, we thought the sky was the limit. I mean, I was so excited to have this awesome, awesome heel that just went crazy over in WCW, and then he went through that awful year where he freaking jobbed a Hogan like 15 times in a row. Mm. He needed a definite breath of fresh air, and I really thought the sky was the limit for him. And I think if you look back, I think it's comfortable to say he was one of the most misused guys in the history of the company. They did nearly enough for him that they should have, and that's kind of sad. But his final record, do you have it in front of you?
I do, but I'm going to let you know first.
Okay.
The temperature in Providence, Rhode Island, September 4th, 98, was 72 degrees.
Oh, so it was very, very comfortable.
Well, that was during the day. The show's usually at night, so probably a little bit cooler.
Okay, but still very, very comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Good. All right, there you go.
Sea level pressure was 29.82 inches.
Right, so you didn't have
wind speed, 6 miles an hour out of the northwest, with a max of 13 miles an hour, visibility,
did it
of,
rock the tent?
Visibility of 9 miles.
Oh, great, so they could look out across and make sure the hot dog truck was there or whatever.
Dew point, 60 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, so it wasn't very humid. It wasn't overly humid, only 60 degrees. All right, final record.
The record... Speaking of records, 92 degrees Fahrenheit, 1937 was the record high. The record low on that day in history in Providence, 1976, 47 degrees.
Wow, in September. Hmm. Well, remember 1937, me and Toots were booking a show in the tent.
It must have been cold in the tent. Well, hot, I mean.
It was crazy, huh?
92.
It was boiling. Oh, Stanislaus and Gotch's little cousin went 5 hours. It was crazy.
I picture you with your wife, Peter, on, smoking a stogie with the fucking chains.
That's right, with the chains, yes. Big cross.
Do whatever you can to survive in that heat.
Oh, it was terrible. All right. 21 pay-per-view matches for the Mastodon. And his final record?
He's a true behemoth.
Yep. 6-13-2. That's awful. Such a shame. Now, if you count the three Rumbles he didn't win, he was 6-16-2. He was 2-0 at the Rumble. So he won all his Rumble singles matches, including one of the biggest upsets you and I have said in the history of the company. And that was when he beat Undertaker in 1997. He was 2-3 if you count the Rumble itself. 1-0-1 at WrestleMania. How about that? Interesting. 0-1 at King of the Ring. 0-1 at SummerSlam. 0-1-1 at Survivor Series. And an unbelievably bad 3-10 at secondary events. He won his first three. How about this? He won his first three other show matches. He won at Good Friends, Bitter Enemies. He won at Beware of Dog. And he won at International Incident. And then he proceeded to lose his final eight between October of 96 and this show. And then he came back a few years later. We'll get to that. His final pay-per-view win, the 98 Rumble, when he beat Goldust. Before that, he last won a match 1 year earlier, as I mentioned. That upset over The Undertaker at the Alamo Dome. Which means his four other wins came between Rumble 96 and International Incident. So from January to July of 96, he was a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And then right at that night in Cleveland... at SummerSlam, where he probably should have beaten Shawn Michaels. Everything went right after that. Damn bummer.
And here's some interesting stats on the end of his run. Mm-hmm. his last TV appearance, October 11th, lost to Edge on Heat.
Yep.
His last appearance overall is on October 25th. He's in a triple threat match, gets pinned by Shamrock. He had lost his last 11 straight house show matches. Last won a house show on September 4th. Last victory on TV was the August 22nd Shotgun defeated Jesus. Since then, he either lost or the match was no contest. And his last Raw victory was on the Saturday Night Special, September 12th. He beat Dustin Runnels. Before that was July 27th, won by countout over D'Lo. And before that was May 11th, defeated Barry Windham. His Raw record for 98 with a three-month hiatus when he was selling that rent shot after No Way Out was 6-3-4, with all four being no contests. So actually not too bad on Raw, but kind of a weak finish.
Now, that September 4th win, wasn't that the one at – that was the one at the tent, right? Did you say he beat Kane?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was the tent match. Okay, I thought so.
There you go.
Here again, he takes on Bradshaw, and typical, you know, big, you know, bruising Haas match. I tell you, though, I'm getting whiplash. These undercard matches just bada-bing, 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 just firing through the turnstile here.
And, of course, Bradshaw now with Funk gone, really just kind of floating aimlessly again, and it'll be soon before he finally finds his way. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. But for now, he's still just a random big bruising heel.
Now I mentioned this in my comments, JR. We didn't put it in the we didn't put it in the match part, but I believe this was an anything goes match. So we'll have to confirm that. But I have that in my comments, but we don't have it in the header of the match.
Let me see what the wonderful Wikipedia says. They have it as a false count anywhere.
Okay, so close enough. So there you go. And he of course jobs to Bradshaw, who of course was sticking around at Vader.
And that's fine. I mean, again, I think this is a fine use of Vader, who's on his way out anyway, so why not put Bradshaw over him, try and get him a win? You know, it was a good Haas match, a good Haas battle. Vader's already, you know, laid down for Mark Henry this year, so losing to Bradshaw is not the worst thing in the world, but there you go.
Yep. So the end of the Mastodon. And it's just it really is sad, JR. Very upsetting because again, those first 7 months of 1996, he was just a beast, and we really expected great things from him. And
well, you know what, we said it before, we won't belabor it, but I really think he came in a year too late. I really think if he came in after the Hogan feud in early 95, if he left after maybe that match at Uncensored and skipped all the face turn and the shit with Flair and Anderson and the Bash of the Beach, if he comes in March and you know, shows up maybe shortly after Mania with DiBiase in his corner instead of you know, right after the Sid feud, maybe they'd do something with him and Diesel instead of all the Tatanka Mabel shit. I think Vader could have, you know, been your 95 King of the Ring and then fought Diesel at SummerSlam. I think it would have been a better run for him.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, I don't think there's any question that, and I hate to say this because I love both guys, but I think Vader would have been a better guy for Sid, Diesel than Sid.
Well, no, I wouldn't replace the Sid thing. I would have ended it sooner. Maybe have them fight at In Your House 1 and then have a singles match, the rematch of King of the Ring, and have Vader win King of the Ring.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, forget all the Mabel nonsense. I concur with you on that. And just stick Vader in that spot.
Yeah.
And then, let me tell you something. Vader Diesel at SummerSlam in Pittsburgh would have been a hell of a better main event than the piece of crap we ended up getting.
No doubt.
Yeah,
and then
you're
can keep that going. You don't have to do the stupid triple header at September. You can do something with Vader there, and I think there's definitely better ways you could have used him if he would have came in a year before. And I mean that 95 run after the Hogan feud, which is a good feud, I liked it, but after that he really didn't have much going on. He did the half face turn, then he was supposed to be a Fall Brawl, and then of course he got the fight with Anderson and all, Paul Orndorff and all that nonsense.
So there you go, farewell to the Mastodon. We will see him again down the road in Vintage Vaults, quite a bit down the road, just about 7 years, but we'll get there. He makes a reappearance, but all right. Next up, a couple other solid mid card guys. He is no longer the World Wrestling Federation European Champion. He was proudly defended it though all over the world. JR.
Yes, he did. Yes,
from
he
Helsinki,
did.
Helsinki, Finland to Lisbon, Portugal.
Hmm.
D'Lo Brown was a tremendous European champion. However, he was no longer. For on the September 14th Raw, X-Pac got his first big win since coming back and his first singles championship as he defeated D'Lo Brown to become the new World Wrestling Federation European champion.
Yeah, they had a good little series throughout this year. Of course, they had the match at Fully Loaded that was non-title, and then they have the match here.
Yeah.
On Raw.
Yes. So here, beltless, he takes on the mysterious gang.
You know, while we're on here with this great theme song, let's plug the theme tournament into round three. I believe Gangrel's still alive in this thing. Should be, anyway. Rougeau's still alive. The Quebecers are still alive. A lot of great themes still going on. You can go to the message board, Bigelow34ProBoards.com.
Yes.
Get voting in that round three. Just kicked off yesterday, so a lot of cool themes. Also, round three of the tag team tournament is kicking off tomorrow. Chad Campbell's going to get on that. It is the uncrowned champion. So basically, the best tag teams who have never won heavyweight tag team gold. We're putting them all in a big tournament. Rocker's obviously the prohibitive favorite right now. But a lot of other good teams still in the mix.
Yes.
Although I think Chad almost had an aneurysm when the Fantastics got killed by the Powers of Pain in the first round.
That's right, because there were a lot of great themes that got bumped in the first round that were very upsetting as well. So,
These tournaments always, I love them, and they always drive me up a wall. The Hottie tournament, almost, I wanted to fucking bash my head through a wall on multiple occasions.
Well, some of the problem was some of these first round matchups, they didn't belong together this early. They should have been later on. But
I'll never forgive
what,
Carrie Underwood over Britney Spears in a rout, and then that idiot Rotello with his propaganda. With his fucking propaganda out there, because he couldn't picture Britney back when she was hot. All he could picture, oh, shut the fuck up, you loser.
When her hair looked like his?
Oh, God.
He wished he had hair that voluptuous.
What a tool. All
right, so speaking of guys with long hair.
Is he coming on? Have we talked to him yet for 200? We got to get that idiot back on.
You know what? He's got his brand new fancy schmancy $9 billion MacBook. So
he's definitely going to be in. We have him lined up for one. We'll talk about it at the end of the show. But he's going to be on 200 because we have a bone to pick with him. Correct?
Regarding
a certain week in July.
Yes, we do. Okay. He says he's in the middle of some master. It's like some master Vince McMahon plan.
Well, you know what? We're going to call him out live on air at 200. So we'll get him lined up.
Yes, exactly. All right, let's get back to this match. So D'Lo beltless against Gangrel. By the way, JR, at this point, live Raws were awesome. House shows were still awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a great live moment.
Oh, yeah.
The lights blinking and the...
Well, I was pissed because in Lowell, when he came out, the arena is so small, there was no stage. We just had a walkway. So I didn't get to see him come up through the, come up through the stage with the, out of the ring of fire and all that stuff. So,
yeah, I saw plenty of... obviously, house shows, even my home house, the New Haven Coliseum, obviously no ramp. But the Raws I saw, it was pretty damn cool.
Have they ever done a mashup on YouTube of Gangrel's theme with Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash? I feel like that would be a good mix.
I got to look that up. I got to ask our buddy Mike, because Mike's good at making mashups. Maybe we'll ask him, because I know he loves.
Yeah, can you have him get on that? Have him do a Gangrel Ring of Fire mashup, and we'll play it on there.
I think he'll definitely go for it. Loves our show. Of course, runs the great website, GetThePointRadio.com. We have our archive on there as well. And big fan. And we've been going back to the old days, talking a lot talked a lot during the Rumble about some old school stuff. So, and of course, the guys that were in the Rumble, we waxed very nostalgic that night. So, I'm going to get him on that because I think he'd do a very good job of it. So, the match is...
you can tell by all the soliloquies and tangents we've been on that not much to this match. It was again, two heels, a very random put-together match. I don't... another one just kind of showcasing guys, I guess. And D'Lo was really starting to get quite the push here, really climbing up the ladder. He had that win over Triple H, was European champion, and almost kind of becoming the leader of the crumbling nation in a way. Interesting push with D'Lo.
Yes. Well, he was turning into a good worker in the ring. He lost some of his flab. He was getting, he was still a big dude, but he wasn't as big and beefy as he was like in 97 when he was just coming on, looking a lot better in the ring. And, he was a fun guy to watch. Mm. So, it was definitely definitely good to see him grow and mature in the ring. And, Gangrel was just a typical, awesome 1998 character.
Gangrel was my ex-girlfriend at the time, used to call him.
Gangrel. he would, of course, grow a bit of a faction. We'll talk more about that over time. Not much there. D'Lo wins a match. And...
Well, Henry helps him win. Mark Henry, of course, still teaming with D'Lo. And then after the match, Gangrel actually spews the blood in Henry's face and then hits D'Lo with the impaler. So it's kind of odd. They have D'Lo go over and then they have Gangrel get his heat back. So odd match.
It was a very odd match.
You almost wonder if it's supposed to be someone else in this, and they stuck one of these in here instead. I don't know if someone got hurt or it was a fill or maybe not. Maybe it was just.
Yeah.
I'm really interested. I know this might be one of those shows where it's so obscure that Kevin may not have a lot of memory of it, but I'm really curious just about this card in general, why it's so haphazard.
Haphazard, weird, yeah. Does it feel like a house show?
Yeah, we're just some kind of. Yeah, it's just an odd show.
Yeah, just very random and kind of arbitrary matchups, but. Again, some of the matches were good. Some
it really
just
feels like to me like they were just like, hey, you know what? We got a lot of new young guys that we want to showcase. Let's just stick them out there in random matches until we get to the big matches.
By the way, on a side note, JR, do you remember those days in 2003 when Vince we used to wear those random plaid shirts when he was in the Zach Gowen feud? I have it on in the event center right now, and I just thought it was funny that was when he had the you know, the summer shirts, and then he would have the weird plaid, and it's just very, very, very un-Vince like. Sorry, but, you know, you normally don't wear plaid. What do you want from me? Anyway, yeah, and should we mention what happens the next night, or do you want to wait till Judgment Day?
With what?
With D'Lo.
Yeah, we'll wait till Judgment Day.
Okay, with Judgment Day. Okay, so there you go. D'Lo gets the win, preparing to try and wrest back the... European title from the current title holder, X-Pac. So X-Pac. There you go. Gets the win over Gangrel. Next up is, I would almost call this, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, JR, but I almost would call this almost part of the main event in a roundabout way, to a certain extent.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You know, hot match.
Hot.
Hot, and would end up being one of the best matches of the year. A triple threat. Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga. No, neither of them are in it. It's a number one contenders triple threat steel cage match pitting Mankind, who came off that shit kicking at SummerSlam by the New Age Outlaws, Ken Shamrock, your King of the Ring winner, and, as Vince would call him, The Rock.
How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
Precisely, Mick. I concur. Again, this was a number one contenders steel cage match. It was kind of a weird... I think what makes this match great, JR, besides the in-ring action, which is very, very entertaining and a lot of fun, the fan allegiances was very bizarre. Kind of goes along with the whole tone of the show.
Yeah.
Expound on that. The allegiance, what's the word I'm thinking of? Kind of like the bizarro allegiances that the crowd had for this match.
Well, everyone was kind of in flux here. Like, Rock was really, ever since SummerSlam, and even leading into SummerSlam, but especially since then, had really been building a following. The fans were finally tired of booing him, wanted to get behind him. So he was starting to kind of slowly turn face a little bit. Mankind, of course, coming off SummerSlam and the Hell in a Cell of King of the Ring, was really starting to develop more of a comedic... kind of sad clown character. So he was, you know, he was starting to gain a lot of sympathy heat. And Ken Shamrock was, I don't want to say getting booze or getting heat, but becoming a lot more serious, a lot more focused, and a lot less caring of anything else around him.
Yeah. Yeah, I concur with that. And I think the cage... I think the cage adds a lot to the match as well. Was that, I believe, actually, that was added on Heat.
Sounds familiar. Let me look it up right here. But
I believe it was added on Heat.
How weird, huh? You'd think they'd really want to sell that.
Yeah, I believe it was added on Heat.
Yeah, well, they had the match itself, actually, on Raw, and it ended in no contest when Undertaker and Kane and then Austin all got involved. And you're right, it was announced on Heat before the show. So very weird that they waited till that long to announce that it would be inside a cage. It's something you'd think they'd want to pimp.
Yeah, it is very weird. But what a match. I mean, almost 19 minutes. That's why I said I think this is part of the main event. Yeah, just a great match. All three guys, very different styles. Foley, obviously, the crazy big dude risk taker. Shamrock, the evil technician. And then Rock was kind of, kind of a hybrid. So, they all kind of worked themselves over. And it was kind of a crazy match. What do you think made this match great? Like, what were you? I mean, were you anticipating this kind of symmetry between these three guys? I mean, why was it such a shock that this match is incredible? Maybe match of the year. One of the matches of the year.
Yeah, I think that it's had uncanny chemistry, and I think they played their roles very well. And you throw three guys in a cage, which we hadn't really seen before, and all guys that had strong followings at this point, strong characters, well developed characters. You had the title shot on the line, and Rock was just so over, and they just all busted their ass. I thought it was a really good one of those matches. Maybe you don't expect it to be as well worked as it is, and it just was. It just went really well.
Yeah, and. Obviously, a very easy win here. The guy that needed it the most was obviously, or the guy that, I shouldn't say the guy that needed it the most. The guy that deserved it the most was Rock. Gets the win. Shamrock crushes, or Mick crushes Shamrock with a chair. Sick shot. And then Rock gets the pin. Pins him. So there was one moment in the match. It was crazy. He stands on top of the cage. Was it kind of on top of the cage? Did the cage have a ceiling? I don't think it did, right?
Oh, definitely not. It was an old school.
Yeah, it was old school. So I think Foley got on top of the cage like he did at SummerSlam 97 and did an elbow drop, but I think he missed it. So yeah, an incredible match. Rock wins, but I think all three guys really showed.
Did you agree with my kind of thought though that of what Mankind was becoming, kind of like this tragic figure?
Yeah, but he was becoming incredibly entertaining. Like the promos were not psychotic anymore, but they were just getting hysterical.
Right, but he was definitely starting to gain like sympathy heat, right, from being.
Yeah, that he was almost becoming like this poor schmuck who, you know, was just getting abused and picked on and beat up and.
You could almost say he was becoming Crazy Joe Davola, or perhaps Pagliacci. Oh, Michael Buffer, why did you do this to me?
Michael Buffer. Yeah, I mean, but Mick was becoming very. This is where you start seeing Mick turn the corner. And now Mick is suddenly becoming a sympathetic character, gaining immense face pops. And by the end of the year, I think that's where the corner turns on his career in general. So a nice win for Rock, but Mick.
I kind of pictured D'Amato as like the sad clown.
Oh, God. All those New Yorkers in there and their music and beats. Crazy.
It's the beards. It's that New York mentality.
It's those that D'Amato guy.
I'm telling you.
And Irv. Who's this Irv?
This crazy beard.
So there you go. So. The Rock becomes the new number one contender with the win. So obviously the crowd slowly starting to be won over by him.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. He gets a huge pop. Huge pop. I agree.
Yeah, huge pop.
Great match. One of those hidden gem matches we talk about. One I feel like you need to go out and check out if you haven't seen it. One you probably haven't heard much about. This isn't on any DVDs, is it? Never made it.
DVDs? I will check.
I got it right here. Hang on. It's on. It's on the Epic Journey of Dwayne the Rock Johnson. That's the new one, right?
That is the new one.
Okay.
Yes,
so it is on his new DVD.
Yeah, I don't have that. I don't have that DVD. But yeah, it's on that one.
All right, I'm glad it finally made it. To something, and just to finish it off, to save you the searching later. Owen and Edge is on Edge's Decade of Decadence DVD, and
yep,
the Hardys versus Kai and Tai match is on Wrestling's Highest Flyers DVD.
Yes,
that's
and
the
that,
heat match.
Yeah. Okay, why don't we take a break? We got three more matches to come, and a couple of them are pretty big in the storyline department. So we'll take a breather. And then when we come back, we will continue Breakdown 1998 here this week on.
And it's going to be an all-new break, Scott. All new. Brand new.
Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it! Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Marv and Chad are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets. And more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, TWFnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours could be included at the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out. Find out what they're about at TWFnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com. My good friend Mike, it's a great online radio station. Not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
All right, Nation, we are back reviewing Breakdown here as part of our Vintage Vault series.
An exceptional break, may I say. An exceptional break. Except speaking of JR, while you were talking. why don't we talk about, we usually do it at the end, but this will be our new little thing now. During the break, when we come out of it, we'll talk about what the other side was doing. What was going on in September on pay-per-view in WCW? Well.
I like it.
In September, the pay-per-view was none other than Fall Brawl. Fall Brawl took place 2 weeks earlier.
Fall Brawl.
September 13th, 1998, from the Lawrence Joel Coliseum in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Home
Is that
of
Billy
Deeks.
Joel's cousin?
Yes. The Bouts, of course, Tony, Bobby, and Mike Tenay. On commentary. Here are your matches. Davey Boy Smith and Jim Neidhart defeated Alex Wright and Disco Inferno.
Ew.
WCW TV champion Chris Jericho defeated a fake Bill Goldberg via submission with the Lion Tamer. Prior to the match, Jericho and his security guards, one of which was Rolfus, walked through the hallways for several minutes before they finally found their way out to the ring, and Jericho tore up Goldberg, the fake Goldberg's toy world title belt. Ernest Miller pinned Norman Smiley. Rick Steiner fought Scott Steiner to a no contest. Mark Curtis stopped the match several moments after noticing Bagwell laying motionless on the apron, blah, 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 blah. Scott climbed in the ambulance and all this other jazz. WCW Cruiserweight Champion Juventud Guerrera pinned Silver King with the Hoovy Driver. Perry Saturn pinned Raven with the Death Valley Driver, kicking out of the Even Flow DDT. Due to pre-match stipulations, the Flock had to disband.
Flock
Raven
you.
Won, Saturn would have rejoined the Flock. Flock off. Dean Malenko defeated Kurt Hennig via disqualification when Rude attacked Malenko as he had Hennig down in a fisherman suplex. After the bout, Arn Anderson attempted to make the save, but was also beaten down and left his arm, and his left arm injured. Injured. Interesting. Conan defeated Scott Hall via submission with the Tequila Sunrise. Conan. At 12:02, wow, how ironic. Scott Hall loses to a finisher named after alcohol. Hall wrestled the Hall wrestled the match drunk and repeatedly went to Vincent for another drink from the cup he brought ringside. That's terrible. Finally, DDP, Warrior, and Roddy Piper defeated Nash, Sting, and Luger, and Hogan, WCW champion Bret Hart, and Stevie Ray in War Games at 20:04 when DDP pinned Stevie Ray with the diamond cutter. Smoke filled the ring at the 60-minute mark as Hogan attacked the Warrior, with the Warrior disappearing only to run to the ring moments later. Hogan later escaped the cage and had it locked behind him, with Warrior escaping as well and brawling with Hogan to the back. After the match, DDP is celebrated with the crowd, and guess what, JR? Due to pre-match stipulations, Paige got a WCW world title shot the following month at Halloween Havoc. So there we go. That's what was happening in September on pay-per-view.
Busting, despicable. Lack of respect. Is that Billy What's-His-Name show?
Well, you didn't get the pin or the title shot, so clearly...
Definitely not one of their highlight outings of the year.
No, that was kind of a clusterfuck, to be honest with you. When did that stupid Scott Hall wrestling drunk thing start?
I don't know!
Okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't remember
sometime
either.
Sometime in 98.
We'll have to ask Graham.
Maybe Chad
can ask
us.
Or maybe we can ask possibly our guest tomorrow night. Maybe he knows.
Oh, he'll know. I'm sure he'll know. He lived it, baby.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. No, I mean the other guest. Maybe they both know. All right. Yeah, maybe. All right, back to breakdown. Let's get out of Winston-Salem and head up northwest to back to Hamilton. Our next match.
Out of the Billy Joel Arena up to the Elton John Center.
Up to the Elton John Center. Here we go. That is the Piano Man match. No, here we go. Guy you mentioned earlier, a couple of solid mid-carders here. One of them, of course, Val Venus, coming off that great match with a weird ending at SummerSlam against D'Lo. Taking on another guy who, what was going on here, JR, really? And that is, of course, we are talking about The Natural.
Although,
yes, come. The Natural at this? Dustin Runnels. What was going on here, JR? Give us the background.
All right. Well, way back in May, we haven't seen this guy in pay-per-view since, Dustin Runnels walked out on stage and gave a scathing promo against Vince McMahon, Terry, and his father for ruining his life and his career. He said the Goldust character was a curse, that he burned the costume in a trash can. McMahon gave the pissed-off Runnels, who was working with an injured knee, a chance to fight Austin on pay-per-view on the 518 Raw. He said if Dustin lost, he'd have to work 30 days without pay. Dustin agreed, lost the match, and added to his frustration. Somewhere along the way, Dustin decided the WWF was headed down the wrong trail. Morality needed to be reintroduced to the Federation. He started praying in the ring before matches and claiming that all of the vulgarity and nudity was wrong. He began parading around ringside with a sign claiming he is coming back. All of this morality preaching caught the air, of course, a certain porn star. Lived a not-so-virtuous life. Mr. Val Venus, rhymes with penis, targeted Runnels and his preaching and decided to make his life a living hell. One week on Raw, Venus walked out with Dustin's ex-wife Terry, now dressed like a slut, sending Dustin into fits, so the stage was set. The popular yet devious porn star adulterer who's banging the hated Bible thumper morality pusher's wife, and here they're about to clash.
Yep.
It's a Shakespearean novel all on itself.
Yes. I'm sure this is something we all watched on, or read in high school, too. Yes. The tragic hero, a porn star. Back to the kind of mid-card express, but this match had a little meat in it, a little over 9 minutes. I can't believe I just said that. But it was a good match, though, and you know, both guys, you know, solid workers. As I read Goldust's book, he says that this stretch 98 into 99, he's, you know, obviously he's true. He really is divorced from Terry, having terrible painkiller issues and alcohol issues. So,
by the way, he's another guy that's on the DDP yoga bandwagon.
Good.
In tremendous shape.
Good for him. Yeah, he looks awesome. He looked great last Sunday.
I like how it's like the whole early 90s WCW mid-card is in on the DDP yoga. Barbarian's going to get involved. Tony Atlas. All the guys that were in there like 92.
Yes. Meng.
Yeah, Meng get Hall going. Probably not.
No.
Well, I don't know. You see Jake, maybe Hall. Could do it.
Well, that's like the holy grail of I mean, if DDP could do it, that's like the holy grail of recovery stories. If he can, yeah. if he can turn Scott Hall around, he's got yeah. There's not much worse. You can't find anybody worse. So mm-hmm. in worse shape. So that'd be amazing. But we hope that for Scott's sake, that at some point in the future he
just
does
that name. It's cursed. Sloppy alcoholic pigs.
And they're beard. And their beards.
The stupid, crazy beards.
Because they're all maxed with beards.
They're all gangsters.
Again, the match is, yeah, it's not bad.
Nothing special. Yeah, you know, the Dustin Runnels idea and character was something I was pretty into at the time. Because I was always like a big Natural fan. And I thought it was time to give the Goldust character a break. And I was pretty into it when he kind of shoot it and looked like he was going to feud with Vince and step up. And, it ended quickly, and he just wasn't in the best shape. And like you said, having a lot of problems backstage, you could tell. He always looked very out of it. His knee was obviously bothering him, and it's not a good run for him. And I expected more out of this character. I kind of liked the Bible-thumping, you know, preacher thing, and I thought it held some... it stood a chance to be something quality, especially in the feud with Val. It's something you think would be a natural feud, and it's just funny that, you know, Val is the face in all this, but that's just how it was back in the 9-8. So... it just, they didn't click. They didn't click as well as I thought they would. And the heat wasn't as great as I thought it should be. And the match itself here just kind of flounders. And Val actually pins him clean with the money shot, which is surprising too. So, weird feud.
It was a weird feud. And again, you know, Dustin in real life, clearly not all there. Mm. And it's very unfortunate. So, and Val Venus, obviously the hotter star at the moment. Guy needs to, obviously, that's earned the push. Gets the win. So, all right, our next match, pretty fun, entertaining, 6-man tag. Pitts, your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, and that is of course the New Age Outlaws, the Road Dogg, the Badass, after the beatdown they gave Mankind at SummerSlam,
mm-hmm.
and their partner, the freshly crowned 2 weeks earlier World Wrestling Federation European Champion.
Yes.
That is, of course, X-Pac. A lot of gold, JR, on this team.
And your boy's not here. Still battling that knee injury he suffered after SummerSlam. So we'll get more to that next month. But he is off the card here. But the rest of DX in the house.
Yes, they are. Their opponents, a guy who, oh, man, you want to talk about an out of the blue, amazing change of character that just rejuvenated mm-hmm. somebody. We're not even doing it anymore. Jeff Jarrett is now just turned the corner, and he's just, if anything was better for him, nobody was more needing of a character change than him. And when he
he needed to be refreshed. He needed a newer look. And yeah, you're right. When they shaved his head at SummerSlam, now he's got a kind of a, you know, he's moved from the 80s into the early 90s. Now he's got like the spiked blonde hair, but whatever, we'll take it. You know, still a little behind the times, but definitely an updated look. He's got the goatee going. A much more clean-cut, serious look here, and you start to take him a little more seriously. He's got new theme music, a little more upbeat, faster-paced, instead of the kind of southern twall that he always had. It makes him seem like more of a legit threat. Southern Justice has his back. Tennessee Lee is gone now, finally, out of his shadow. Big shadow.
Yes.
He wasn't around long, huh? I always thought he was around much longer than he was.
Yeah, no, he wasn't around that long. That is very strange.
Southern Justice still hanging on. They'd actually be gone after the show, though, and that would be it for them. Dennis Knight will stick around. Canterbury is pretty much done. Of course, he had his neck broken back in by the LOD in 97, had it re-injured in the Brawl for All, kind of took some time off to rehab, but never ended up returning. So this is it for him, sadly. Of course, he's been around since, what, end of 94, early 95 for us?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and obviously had a lot of big moments, War Tag Team Gold.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of
Bam Bigelow, Sid.
That's right. Yeah. So big moments, but this will be it for him. The match is that's not bad. You know, a little over 11 minutes, but this really, for my opinion, showcases DX as a total unit, and now holding, you know, 3/5 of the gold in the World Wrestling Federation. You've got the tag team champ. Actually, right now they have 4/5 of the gold. The tag team champ, I don't know if anybody really realizes this. At this moment in time, they had the tag team straps. They had the European straps. And at the moment, Triple H was still the Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, a lot of goals.
So they had 4/5 of the belts.
Kind of a sad turn for Mark Canterbury, just for a minute here. So obviously he left shortly after this was injured. He'd try and make a comeback in 06. He actually earned a developmental contract and never really made it to TV. In his personal life, he had two sons. One of them was accidentally shot by a high school friend and died on October 31st, 2003 in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. I don't know if he was a friend of David Silver or not, but sadly.
Yes.
Sad story. But and then on 11-9-2011, Mark reportedly drove his automobile off a road in West Virginia, suffered two punctured lungs, 13 broken ribs, and a broken leg. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, rough go of it the last decade here for poor Mark Canterbury. He finally remembered as Henry Orpheus Godwin.
Yes. Shame. I was a big, I don't know, I got to admit, I was kind of into Southern Justice. I kind of thought it was a good
too little too late
term for them. Yeah, no, I agree.
A little too late for them. You know, it was kind of a last-ditch effort to give him something to do, but Canterbury was just in too rough a shape. And Knight, as we'll see, will stick around for a while. But
yeah
that's it. And Jarrett, of course, will pick up a new backup over the next couple weeks.
Yes, very, very important one as well. So you have the DX, who's gold laden, big time. I think this is more a showcase for them than for. I mean, nothing against Jeff Jarrett, but he was just kind of in the middle here until he found his niche. I think this is more just to show DX's clout. Again, 4/5 of the gold. Unfortunately, yes, because Triple H was hurt, really couldn't get the full extent of it, but that's okay. And DX gets the victory.
Yeah, really just, like we said, blowing off the feud from SummerSlam with the haircut. You know, not much going on here. Just a chance to get DX on the show.
Yeah.
Like and, most of this card. That's it. I mean, it's a chance to get guys on the show.
Get guys on the show, get a payday. Billy Gunn hits the Famouser on Dennis Knight and just a little over 11 minutes and gets the win. So there you go. So DX, living large, full-blown faces. I am a hog, and 4/5 of the gold in the...
TB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
Vincent Kenny McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan update. There is none because he was recovering from cancer, wasn't wrestling. Criscolo, how was your personal training session tonight?
It's next week, sir.
Next week? What do you do, once a month?
No, every other week, but I did...
kind of harsh it's that. I remember back me and you, back in the old man, old hard school, old school gym, back in the 20s, we used to lift fucking dumbbells and barbells and ride around on that giant bike that had one big wheel and one small wheel, and we both had handlebar mustaches. You remember that shit?
That's right, I do. It was awesome.
That's how men worked out, Criscolo.
That's right. Hanging and banging.
Wait a minute. What's this? This stupid Guido Wap Bruno Sammartino just walked in back. What the fuck is going on? When did this asshole show up? Criscolo, you know anything about this?
I indeed do. What? You, my friend, need to atone for your sins.
I've been hoodwinked.
You have been bamboozled, flim-flammed.
What's this piece of shit do? I can't. I'm out of here, Criscolo. Go fuck yourself. Suck it, bitch. Hey, Bruno, come over here. Bring your stupid son so I can job him out again.
About time he got what he deserved.
I don't give a shit what you did to Stan Stasiak back in 67. Get the fuck out of my arena.
67. Oh, God. Such an old Vince is. It was 73. Anyway. Of course, the big news. Might as well just say it. Everybody knows it. We'll know already by the time this comes out. The new headliner. This might be the first time, JR, in the era of the Hall of Fame classes, that the original headliner has been bumped.
Mm.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
Well, I think they kind of knew that this other one was coming. I think they just weren't banking on it.
Banking on it. And that is, of course, the living legend from D'Abruzzi, Bruno Sammartino, is indeed going into the WWE Hall of Fame for 2013. Wow. What a night we're going to have at the Garden, JR. And they're going to be it's going to be amazing. PTB Nation, get ready. It's going to be awesome.
We'll talk much about that in the build-up. We're going to do a whole show, headlines focusing on Mania, some other Mania stuff as we get closer. And, of course, the night after We'll be doing our show. We're going to talk. We'll probably have some of the guys on that were there live, and we'll go over the whole night. So, or the whole weekend, really.
Yes, and then we're going to shave Matt Rotella's eyebrows. But yes, more on that in the next few weeks. All right, time for our main event. And how often is it, JR, that we have, if you count Heat, not one, not two, but three triple threat matches? The hell's that ever happen? Very strange. Although, this wasn't exactly built as a triple threat match, or was it? I'm talking, of course, about your World Wrestling Federation champion, the only non-DX guy that has a belt, and that is, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin, coming off his huge win at SummerSlam over The Undertaker in a fantastic match at Madison Square Garden. Triple threat match, though, against the guy that he beat at the Garden, The Undertaker, and now the guy that he lost to at King of the Ring and then won it back the night after.
Yes.
And that is, of course, Kane, who never really got his rematch back.
No, and this is an interesting match because it's like one that you made perfect sense to have because these are the three biggest stars right now, you know, outside of maybe Rock, that you got going on. They've been feuding on and off as a whole since the summer. Made perfect sense to build to this, but is it a match you really wanted to see on any level?
No.
You know, Taker and Kane, with every match they've had throughout 98, it's gotten worse. And it does not get any better here. And, of course, as you kind of hinted at, wasn't really a full triple threat because 2 weeks before this on Raw, McMahon said that Kane and Undertaker were not allowed to pin each other. They could only pin Austin. And if anyone interfered on behalf of Austin, he'd be stripped of the title. And, of course, Taker had pretty much solidified his heel turn by associating with McMahon, Paul Bearer, and Kane. So thirsty for the world title, he sold himself back out to the dark side heading into the show. So Taker back heel for the first time. Since what? Yeah. Rumble 92 was the last pay-per-view as a heel.
Yeah, so 6.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it would burgeon as the months would progress to something very, very different. So there you go. That sets up this match, which, of course, in essence is a glorified handicap match. Mm. And it's just, it's not good. It's not good. It's very bland. Not a lot of fluidity. Triple threats for guys who don't have the stamina to last. I mean, the match is about 17 and a half minutes. Taker and Kane weren't working great together to begin with.
Right, but the funny thing is all three of these guys have had good matches with each other.
Yeah.
Like, Austin's had, obviously, an excellent match with Taker and a very good match with Kane. Kane and Taker had, you know, pretty solid match at Mania since then, been downhill. But it's just funny to put the three of them together here with a pretty good storyline, but they just don't get it going, really. And, you know, Taker and Kane both have kind of plotting offense at this point, and to have them both kind of be the heels in a Heat segment, this wasn't really the good formula here. But I think it was a necessary evil. I look at these next two shows as necessary evils to get to where they wanted to go. And the product was so hot they could kind of get away with it here. So to me, this is just a match filling out this card that they needed to do to get to where they wanted to get. So, you know what? We had to suck it up and deal with a shitty 18-minute main event. but the story behind it was good, and where they were headed was great. So we just kind of needed to get it out of the way.
Yeah. I think the end of the match is pretty hilarious. We have a double choke slam, and then Kane and Taker both get on top of Austin. Both hook a leg, and I thought Austin was going to kick out or something weird was going to happen. But then the three count happened. And I want to say not as bad as when, I mean, not nearly to the level that Andre beat Hogan in 88 at the main event, but I really had this, did he really just lose? I mean,
Well, and it's interesting, too, because he had just lost to Kane and won it back, and it's weird to see him lose again. It was definitely shocking. I agree.
Yeah, and then Fink goes, you know, the winner and new World Wrestling Federation champion, and then nothing. And you know, Vince grabs the belt, runs away. Austin chases him, and then Vince does the infamous sticking his head out of the limo. You don't have it anymore. Yeah, actually, you do it. You're the
title's mine, you fucking bald piece of shit.
No. Never trust him to do anything. It's mine! And he does the middle finger, the weird middle finger, and then he drives off, and Austin's standing there heaving.
I mean, this is really where the first time in a while, the world title's almost becoming a prop. And it's almost okay here because it's so hot. Unfortunately, it kind of becomes a trend that isn't good. But at this point, it really is just a prop between the feud of Vince and Austin.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, he's using it to dangle in front of him, and they're stripping it, and he keeps dropping it. And a guy like Austin finally winning the title, we've been conditioned for a while now that when a top face wins the belt, they get a run. You know, we had Hogan, we've had Brett, we've had Shawn, we had Diesel. You know, we're used to the face champion, really, you know, a Taker in 97. We're used to the face champion having a lengthy run with the belt, and now Austin's already lost it twice, and he's supposed to be the mega money guy. Yeah. And I know the money's in the chase, and we'll chronicle that, but it was shocking to see him not have that stranglehold that you expected him to have after 14.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know that the storyline was getting, you know, between him and Vince was really getting ratcheted up. That's where, again, I go back to Kane winning at King of the Ring just didn't really make any sense. Because if you're going to do it now, it's just, I mean, we're not going to get back to that debate. But, yeah, it's just really strange. And now, for the first time, again, going back to another time of the year, right? For the first time since, technically for the first time since Shawn lost his smile, but really in a major stretch for the first time since the end of 91 and the beginning of 92, the WWF title is vacant. Or is it vacant? Lex, do you know if it's vacant or not?
I don't know!
There you go. So yeah, the title is vacant for the first time. I mean, was it vacant technically? I guess it was vacant before Final Four.
It was. That was the last time.
But for a long stretch, obviously the end of 91 going into the 92 Rumble. Mm. I hate vacated belt.
I didn't mind it here.
It had to be. Yeah, it had to be. But Austin losing just floored me.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but we were getting, you know, we were in the fall, and you know what that means. It's time to ratchet up, and we're already through one WrestleMania arc, time to start another one. And for me, this night begins easily my favorite WrestleMania story arc of all time. I just love the way this went, all the twists and turns, and we'll obviously document it all through. Easily my favorite WrestleMania story arc of all time starts on this night in Hamilton. So there's Breakdown. It's, as JR and I have said, I mean, really the only thing we could say is it's just a really unusual show. It's not out anywhere. I mean, if you have a copy, if you know someone, maybe they'll let you borrow it or dub it for you, but, it's not on anything. I mean, was it even on? I guess it was on VHS, right?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Yes, it was.
VHS, yeah.
Good luck trying to find it. I'm sure if you go on Amazon, it'll be a pretty penny, or eBay. But again, you're not really missing much. The main couple matches are the ones that are on the comps: The Rock Triple Threat, the Owen Edge, and then that Hardy Boys one and Heat, which I totally forgot about.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
I can't believe the main event hasn't popped up somewhere along the way.
I know. Probably because really, usually. Unless they do like a most controversial matches or some weird thing. Otherwise, usually a match like this focuses on a certain person, but this match benefits no one. You know, it's not a Kane match. It's not a Taker match. And it's certainly not an Austin match. So you don't even know who this is focusing on or who this is emphasizing to even put it in a compilation. So it is kind of strange. Unless they do most controversial. I'm surprised they didn't put it in the Attitude Era DVD.
Yeah,
because it's pretty much just an Attitude Era main event, but you know, something entertaining that has no ending. You know, it's very strange. But.
Yeah, no, odd. You're right. I thought it would have popped up somewhere. So as a whole, the show, nothing too inspiring, nothing that great. If you want a taste of the Attitude Era, you want a taste of the personalities, this is a show to check out. But I mean, if you're looking for anything, you know, there's no great match. Well. The cage match is very, very good, but no standout match. Nothing I'd say go out of your way to watch on the show. But, you know, it's a fine slice of attitude.
That's a good way to put it, fine slice of attitude. DX was on the poster, remember correctly. That was Triple H had one of my favorite T-shirts that I could never find, and that was the red like candle wax stamp. I always loved that T-shirt, but every house show I went to, never on the never in the concessions. It kind of always bummed me out. Okay, you've heard from us. Now it's time to hear from you. What do you think, JR? A little PTB feedback.
Kick it off.
All right. Jay Hinchy. I think that poster is one of my all-time favorite WWF/E pay-per-view posters, as I just mentioned, DX on the front. Breakdown heads north of the border in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, to kick off an interesting fall in the company. Edge and Owen Hart have a good opener. We see the debut of Edge's brother, or Edge, some guy. We'll tell you who it is later. Owen gets the win in his home country against his fellow Canadian. Al Snow and Scorpio take on Too Much in tag team action in an okay match with the former ECW guys getting the win. Mark Mero then takes on Draws in a match. I don't know why it was taking place, but Mero wins with the Marvelosity. Bradshaw and Vader then meet in a Falls Count Anywhere match, which was not bad. Bradshaw gets the win in the last hurrah for Vader on pay-per-view. D'Lo Brown and Gangrel meet in another I have no idea why they met match, but it's pretty good with D'Lo scoring the win thanks to Mark Henry. The Rock, Mankind, and Ken Shamrock meet inside a steel cage to determine the number one contender to the title in an awesome match. Foley missing the elbow from the top, whacking Shamrock with a chair, Rock's double people's elbow are the main highlights here. Rock gets the win on Shamrock while Mankind tries to climb out of the cage and is number one contender. Yeah, I forgot about that. Mick was kind of stupid trying to climb out so slowly while Rock just simply pinned him. That made all, like you said about the tragic character, he was just doing dumb things.
Right, right.
You know? Val and the former Goldust, Dustin Runnels, follow in a decent bout with Terry at ringside. Dolph gets the win, but has not seen the last of Dustin. DX continue their feud with Jeff Jarrett and his Southern Justice in a pretty good six-man tag. DX wins, but X-Pac takes a wicked guitar shot from Jarrett in the eye. Oh, I forgot about that. Took the eye shot from Jarrett, which leads to what happens the next night. We'll get to that next month. WWF title in the triple threat. Stone Cold Steve Austin meets both Undertaker and Kane. Good main event as Austin does all he can to fight off Taker and Kane, but are too much. The brothers pin Austin to end his title reign, but who is the champion? Overall, a decent pay-per-view. Bring on Judgment Day.
Chad Campbell. WWF followed up one of the best pay-per-views of all time with a subpar effort and breakdown. Everything feels transitional, and the only real highlight is the very good triple threat cage match. The ending of the main event is fairly clever and led to some great stuff down the road, but it feels like a pretty cheap cliffhanger to people that bought this pay-per-view.
Dennis Nunez. After the most memorable summer in WWF history, it's time to crash from the terrific SummerSlam show and keep pressing on with this somewhat average affair with WWF Breakdown. The good is that the undercard is pretty strong quantity-wise. The bad is that Vince Russo was in charge, or as Dennis types, Vince Russo was in charge of the book. Hey, another guy with a beard.
Hey, Dennis Russo.
Another guy with a beard was in charge of the booking, and it shows. Matches with no backstory that are too short and just aren't very good. The triple threat and steel cage match is a fun watch as Rock starts to get seriously hot as a babyface. While the fans still loved Austin, they need another guy to get behind, and Rock was the man of the hour after having disbanded the Nation. Mick thinking he's Jimmy Snuka and flying off the cage is a great bump as Mick continues to risk his career for our enjoyment. Just a good match that's always fun to watch. The Stone Cold reign as WWF champion comes to an end as Austin loses the title in a pretty pedestrian triple threat match. It's too bad that Austin's reign as champ didn't last a bit longer. The ending visual is great, though, with Vince giving the finger to Austin from his limo, shouting, "You don't have it anymore, Moa." All I have to say about this show, really, pretty plain Jane of a show, as it's kind of just there. It's a good way to kill 3 hours, but nothing else.
Wade Ferrari, very average show overall. Edge Owens a good opener, but other than that, the undercard's pretty forgettable. Triple Threat Cage is definitely the high point of the show. Very entertaining match with all three guys really beating the crap out of each other. It's amazing how quickly and how big Rock got over as a face after a fairly big heel, only a month before. Didn't care for the main event at all. I thought it started promising with Austin trying to divide and conquer by attacking Taker during his entrance so he could fight Kane one-on-one. However, quickly just turned boring. 2-on-1 beatdown that went way too long. I did like the finish as it did a nice job making you wonder what was going to happen next with the feud and championship.
Okay. Corey Ferreira. Owen Hart versus Edge. Good opener. Two great workers going out and having a great match. Owen gets the win. Nice seeing how he was booked at the start of the year with all the BS with Shawn and Triple H. Al Snow, Scorpio, Too Much. So the Snow versus Too Much thing continues here from King of the Ring, and thank God they have Snow, a good worker, and Scorpio to team with and not Head. Pretty much solid tag match for solid workers. Weird seeing Mero wrestle on pay-per-view in something that does not involve Sable or Jackie. Poor match. Both these guys aren't great workers, and it shows with this match. He gets the win, and I still fucking hate him. The Vader burial continues here. Honestly, just needs to leave WWF now because this is sad. I have no idea why they felt the need to make this Falls Count Anywhere, but here we are. I'm really digging D'Lo now. Gangrel has a great entrance, but honestly, that's all it is, really. D'Lo wins in what was a poor match here. This is easily match of the night, the triple threat in the cage. All three guys put on one hell of a cage match that gets underlocked by other cage matches. Underlooked, I think that was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Rock walks out the winner, and he's really getting quite the following now, isn't he? So Dustin Runnels, the preacher, takes on the porn star because the porn star messed around with the preacher's wife. Well, this is a Russo. Considering both these guys are solid workers, this match is quite poor. Venus wins, thankfully, because I hated this Runnels character. Jarrett and X-Pac continue their feud from SummerSlam, and the tag teams join the action. I know they gave the Godwins makeovers here for the new era, but I still don't like them. DX win in another bad match on the show. I would have rather seen another X-Pac versus Jarrett match than this mess. In the main event, I know this was built up as a three-way, but it's a glorified handicap match. The Brothers of the Destruction come together to end Austin's second world title run with a double pin. The match is okay, but it's weak main event in terms of in-ring action. as we end the show with the one question we have is, who will be the new WWF champion? Overall, this is a poor show. The cage match is the lone great match. The Owen versus Edge match is solid. The rest comes off as poor and just meaningless. Do we really need Vader and Bradshaw on a false count anywhere match on this show? The main event is one of them shows we see the end to a bunch of times, but it's not a memorable match like many main events are of this time. And D. Meltzer's grades. Owen Edge 2 3/4. The tag with Too Much and Alan Scorpio 2 1/4. Mero draws quarter star. Bradshaw Vader 1.5. D'Lo Gangrel 1/4. Rock Mick Shamrock 3.5. Val Dustin 3/4 star. DX Southern Justice 1 3/4. And Taker Kane Steve 2 1/4.
Yeah, not very well regarded.
No.
B.A. Meyer, bam. Breakdown is a two-match show. Triple Threat Cage is a really good hidden gem that doesn't get near enough love. The show becomes rather historic for the main event as the Steve era slows down and the title becomes vacant. This sets up the most iconic Raws over the next couple months. We all know where this leads, so I let you two articulate it over the next month or so. Breakdown is definitely an important point on the timeline of the Austin McMahon feud.
Safazio DeFazio.
Hey, he was back.
Look at this. Look who's back. All right.
Do it. All right, big pun. Go ahead. Take a breath and go.
Guess who's back at Safazio? Sorry, boys. I've been busy with work. I haven't had time to feedbacks lately, but I'm back better than ever. I really miss you guys. Got to see Breakdown with my uncle, who was living in Cambridge, so we couldn't go to Cops to see it because I had school the next day, but I was fine. So was my pay-per-view streak. Anyways, I enjoyed the steel cage match, and the three guys, Rock, Mankind, Ken Shamrock, would dominate the rest of 1998, and I was looking forward to the triple threat match, and I got to say PICs. The finish was pretty good. Vince screwing everybody out of the title was genius, and that meant Austin would be chasing after the title, which I love, by the way. Plus, it was a setup for the next night on Raw and the next pay-per-view anyways. Austin, Taker, Kane, all three good workers at this point. Like, come on, this was what 1998 was made for, and I discovered at this point some small indie wrestler coming at this point. More on him soon.
Steve Rogers, fun pay-per-view, kind of a mixed bag of current stuff and signs of things to come with the Hardys on Heat and Edge at the start against Owen. Very sad to see Vader's mainstream career end with such a whimper, especially in such a short time from the peak of his WCW days. The rise of The Rock continues, an interesting way to get the belt off Austin to help further his feud with Vince.
Craig Dickinson. Following up an outstanding SummerSlam was always going to be tough, and Breakdown does a solid job, but never really clicks into top gear. The show opens with a good pacey match. Edge clearly has some in-ring talent. Who better than Owen to help make him look good? Al Snow gets some revenge over Too Much, who can't seem to keep their hands off each other. Way better than that awful King of the Ring handicap. Mark Merrill makes his win over draws worthwhile by hitting the awesome Mar Velocity. In stark contrast, Vader kicks out of Bradshaw's clothesline, so Bradshaw just hits it again and then busts out a neckbreaker. Weird finish to that match. Triple Threat Cage steals the show. The three-man abdominal stretch was a sweet spot. I forgot about that. And Foley's flying elbow was another great moment. Really smart finish that elevates both Rock and Mankind, who started to show their great chemistry together in this oft-forgotten classic. Dustin vs. Val is an all-right match, but the setup seems weird as Runnels seems to be an underdog heel. Six-man tag is fine. Southern Justice look way better than their Godwin days. Putting them with Jarrett was a smart move. Main event isn't great, just the usual Taker-Kane offense with Austin getting beaten down for the most part. Screwy finish is a classic Monday Night Wars move to get people to tune in for Raw. All in all, a pretty decent offering. The strong mid-card is really starting to roll, but the main event scene over the next month or so isn't too much to look forward to.
Dave Hall, after an amazing SummerSlam, we get returned to the struggling undercard and a strong main event level matches at this event. Owen Hart meets Edge in a reasonable opener, but it's sad to see Owen transitioning down the card. Al Snow and Scorpio beat Too Much in a match that does nothing to set the world on fire. Mero and Draws is a waste. Why let Draws lose here when Mero's on the way down the card? Bradshaw sends Vader out of the company with a loss in a very stiff, forgettable match. Surprisingly, D'Lo and Gangrel do not put on much of a match either, while Dustin seems to be treading water and bringing Val down with him. DX struggles to get anything out of Southern Justice. It really made me wonder how we got such a good SummerSlam at times. Again, the two main event level matches save the show. Both triple threats. Rock, Mankind, Shamrock match steals the show. Fantastic with lots of good action. Showing you these two men, these three men have deserved the pushes. Cage gimmick was not needed, but it added intrigue to the match. Thank you, Rock, for stepping up your game. The other triple threat, while not as good in-ring, certainly had a good storyline. And Kane, Undertaker take Austin out, but can't agree who'll win. They finally both cover Austin. I remember being annoyed they took the belt off Austin here. I feel his reign should have lasted longer. I know Austin chasing the title and Revenge of McMahon's a great story. I could have waited a month or two before taking the title. So there is your feedback, and there is our review of Breakdown 1998. Hope you all enjoyed it. It's a good return after our week off, Scott. Good to be back.
Yes. No, exceptional show. Always good to talk to you and be with you, JR. And a great show tonight. I thought we did our best to kind of flower up an otherwise very lackluster warm water pay-per-view. So there you go. On a side question, maybe PTB Nation may answer this. Do you remember when this Best of SmackDown, the SmackDown Countdown DVD came out? The reason I'm asking, well, it must have been 2009 because it's a 10-year anniversary. The reason I'm asking is, obviously, it happened after Chris Benoit died, or that whole thing happened. But they actually show him on a clip on disc three. Remember that awesome TLC four tag match? They show, remember him and Jericho?
Well, there were times they've showed incidental clips of him. It's just usually when he's featured, they don't show it.
Yeah, so they just, I thought maybe they would try to like duck that cut. But anyway, I just want to mention that because he's on the screen for a minute. So anyway.
All right, so tomorrow night we have a big night planned. We will be back with another episode. Graham Cawthon will be here, and that's because we're going to be interviewing Scott Hudson, WCW commentary legend. Of course, was there from the mid-90s on, really became a fixture in the late 90s when he jumped into the Nitro and pay-per-view booth. Worked with a lot of the guys during the downfall in the lean years of WCW. So, you know, we've talked to, you know, J.J. Dillon about the rise of WCW in some of the later years. But a guy like Hudson, I feel like maybe is a little bit more in on the loop during those dying days than J.J. was. J.J. seemed to be there kind of just cashing a paycheck, whereas Hudson, I think, was really trying to make more of a name for himself. So,
right.
Plus, I want to pick his brain on the infamous, you know, Bagwell-Booker match on Raw. Where WCW Deal died officially, and he was part of that on commentary. So it'll be a lot of fun talking to Scott. We're looking forward to that. Hopefully I'll have it posted tomorrow night. The latest will be Wednesday night, so we'll see how long it goes. Graham will be with us as well to help conduct that. Next week we have, what do we got, Judgment Day 98, and headlines then, building and into headlines. Elimination Chamber. We have Kyle on. We have a new segment coming with Jordan Duncan. We mentioned that before. The half-baked ideas. So we have a lot of cool stuff coming, and as the month goes on of February and into March, a lot of cool stuff planned. Like I said, we have some things for Mania coming up. Also, is it March, Scott? We're going to do the poll. The end of March. We're going to do a fan vote to pick a vintage vault for us to review. Anything non-pay-per-view, WWF pay-per-view. We're going to put up a poll of five or six choices. I'll probably do that next week because I want to have a lot of lead time, Scott, for us to be able to watch it. If it's something we haven't done yet. So we're going to put that up next week, and you guys can vote what show we'll do towards the middle of March. So a lot of cool things coming in the coming weeks, but right now we'll focus on Scott Hudson tomorrow night, and that'll be it for this week. And like I said, next week, Judgment Day and headlines. So, all right, Scott, let's wrap things up. Anything you want to talk about?
Not at all.
You want to pimp your blog?
Great show. Great show tonight. Yes, let's pimp, Pete. Let's pimp Bigelow34.proboards.com. Well, you were pining away with Honey Boo Boo's family there. We had a great week of reviews. A lot of guys were writing some good stuff. I did, for those that don't know, and I really love your feedback so far, I've been doing kind of a weekly TV report card. I've been watching four shows, Monday Night Raw, Main Event, Impact, and SmackDown. Just doing a blog, you know, kind of writing like JR does, stream of consciousness kind of stuff. This past week, I debuted two new things. I do my top five, and I want to confirm with Irv, Irv C, good, great listener to the show, loyal New Yorker. When I do my, I do a top five in the company or on the show, not that night. People will, because I did Impact, and I had Rob Van Dam, who's the X Division champion, as you know, JR. And I put him in the top five, and Irv goes, what do you have him? He wasn't even on this week. And I just want to clarify, not the top five that night, top five in the company, just to let you know. And I'm also going to do the top three matches of the week on TV.
And who gets the credit for that idea, Scott?
You gave me that idea, JR, and I applaud you for that. And that was I think it's a good idea. In fact, I'll tell you something. I get a weird feeling, and we'll get more into this next week with Kyle on the headline show. When we have the headline show, that's when I'll do like my monthly report card of the four shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to see better matches on Impact than I will on any of the other shows. I feel like that happened last week.
Well, see, this is why I like that you're doing this, because you know, on the year review, you kind of shit all over TNA, and I busted your ball saying I don't think you've actually watched it anytime recently. You know, so I think it's good that you're actually watching it and you get to now have a legit criticism. And I feel like I'm doing the same thing with Ring of Honor, part of my blog. I've done every show so far this year, and it's good. I've really enjoyed watching something different and getting into Ring of Honor. And I do a lot of other stuff in my blog. I do Raws from 98. I got NWAs from 88, Prime Times from 89, all kinds of things going on.
Yes, I'll be actually a big surprise. I'll be adding something else to my blog very soon as well. It's a surprise, though. I'm gonna be adding a new review. It's got nothing to do, totally separate from since we've taken a breather from our WWE pay per views. I'm gonna be adding a new wrinkle to my blog. Nothing to do with the four weekly shows. It's gonna be a bonus.
Okay. Very interesting.
So I will let everyone know what that will be soon once I acquire the trove. But okay. Anyway, just want to let you know that. But Bigelow34.proboards.com. JR, I know you probably looked intermittently when you were away, but last week was a real hot week again. Mm-hmm. Territory Wars are cranking again. Of course, the polls. And again, the reviews. Guys, awesome job. Keep it up. Don't stop. You've been doing an awesome job, everybody. Riddle, obviously. Mr. Richard, though, is not. There's one review area. That's
I know. I got to get on him. He's been a busy boy, but I will get on him. Don't worry. I told him. You know, he was supposed to. He thought he was going to rub it in your face. He thought his would be more consistent than yours, and now he shit the bed. So I will get on Flash and make sure he gets things going. I saw him last night. He was over here watching the Super Bowl. So.
All right.
Let's wrap. We'll be back tomorrow night. Scott Hudson. That's Scott Criscolo. Not Scott. Justin Rosero. We'll talk to you tomorrow night with Graham. Scott Hudson. In tow.
Honey Boo Boo hates kids.
Do you think New Yorkers have beards, but people in Connecticut wear merkins?
Probably. And obviously, people that fly JetBlue who hate kids have mullets.
And birds now. And people who used to live in Rhode Island but live in Connecticut now have no hair.